Onchan MHK Rob Collister was in the Falkland Islands last month as part of a Commonwealth Parliamentary Association team of election observers. To tell us what the Isle of Man can learn from such trips, Mr. Collister joins me now on Agenda. You have recently returned from a trip to the Falkland Islands. Now, I suppose the first question that we need to get out of the way is who paid for that trip?
Yeah, so good evening, Phil. Most of the costs were paid by the Commonwealth Parliamentary Association. Some were paid by the Falkland Islands and some were paid by myself personally. Now, this invitation came from the Commonwealth Parliamentary Association, the British, Irish and Mediterranean region, who were invited by the governor of the Falkland Islands to conduct an international election observation mission. And this was the first time a mission has taken place in the Falkland Islands. And it was an absolute privilege for me to be part of that.
And the reason that you have observers coming along to observe elections, it's pretty obvious, isn't it? But you tell us, why do you need observers?
Well, the actual mission objective was to conduct an independent assessment of the Falkland Islands general election process against international standards, commitments and obligations, as well as the island's domestic laws. And this included, so I'll read you out a list. So this included the right to vote without discrimination, each vote carrying equal weight. Voters can make choices without coercion, and candidates can campaign freely. Transparency, accountability, elections occur at regular intervals, which they do. You know, protection of voters' privacy. Elections operate independently and fairly. We also looked at the legal frameworks and checking the implementations of those against voters' registers, campaign, and obviously looking at how the media actually covered those elections as well. We also had the privilege of observing the election day process, and that includes the polling stations, how people voted, and also the counting, which went into the night. And then obviously at the end of it, we looked at any disputes and how they were resolved at the time. So from my point of view, it was an absolute privilege to be there and to be invited to oversee that election. And the key of it was about observing, not interfering.
And of course, these observations happen in elections all throughout the Commonwealth parliamentary area, include the Isle of Man. And we had observers in the Isle of Man for the last general election, I think it was, and there were some useful bits of advice came out of their observations. They were talking about different things that needed perhaps tweaking, things like disabled access to different polling stations, things like this. What were the key findings that your team had?
In respect of the observation missions, what normally happens is that we publish a preliminary statement, and we did that on the day after the election. There will be a greater report coming out in about two and a half months, which gives full details of any observations that or recommendations or conclusions that we may have. And then it's up to the government of the Falkland Islands to either accept those conclusions or recommendations, similar to what happened in 2021 here in the Isle of Man. But our initial sort of review of the Falkland Islands election was that it was a very well-run election. And I think our observations showed that everything was being done correctly in order to ensure that everybody within the community had an opportunity to cast their vote.
And it's a big place, the Falkland Islands, isn't it? It's a lot bigger than the Isle of Man.
I have to admit, I got caught out on that, because when I arrived on the Falkland Islands, I was expecting it to be similar size than the Isle of Man. I soon discovered that it's actually 20 times bigger than the Isle of Man, or half the size of Wales, as somebody mentioned to us. So to cover all of this election process, we had one team that went to another island to collect votes there in a plane. We had a team that went to Darwin and in order to collect votes there or to observe votes being collected, but they were also based there in Goose Green in order to actually see the whole election day unfold. I myself was based in Port Stanley. So for the election day, I was based in Port Stanley. The day before on polling, on the mobile polling station, we went out in a car and people were able to cast their vote on farms, on country lanes. And so my job was to observe that process. And in total, I think that day I was in the car for over 10 hours.
And the number of votes that are cast are really quite small compared with the Isle of Man.
Yeah, so the population of the Falkland Islands is around 3,360 people. Now, three quarters of those live in Port Stanley, and then the rest lives in a place called The Camp, and they are scattered right across both islands. So we had a job to observe all of that process. There is also 1,500 military people there, but they do not vote. But from our point of view, it was fascinating to see how all of this unfolded, how they end up bringing all of the ballot boxes back, and for the process then to see the count unfold. And the camp vote came in quite quickly because there's only about 300-400 people living there collectively. And then the Stanley vote, was even that was finished by about 10:30 at the evening. So from an election point of view and from a politician point of view, it was fascinating to see their election process. For example, in Port Stanley, you do not put election posters out. You do not go knocking on doors. But in the camp, which is outside the capital, people are expected to go and have a cup of tea with their constituents and to spend many hours listening to their concerns. But if you did that in Port Stanley, you probably would not get the vote.
Gosh.
So it's fascinating to see how two different areas considered their election process.
I recall when we were looking at changing the boundaries in the Isle of Man, one or other of the politicians who shall remain nameless from a single seat constituency suggested that moving to three seaters, which obviously would have favoured my position, moving to three seaters would be impossibly difficult for them to do because they would have this huge expanse of the island to have to cover. What you're saying is, you know, for 300 votes, you've got potentially hundreds of miles to cover.
Absolutely. So if you take the Falkland Islands collectively, you normally have around three members that are elected from the camp. So what actually happened there, and there were only about 300 people voting for them. Hmm. So you had five people in the camp area standing for three seats. In the actual Port Stanley, you actually had 14 people standing just for five seats. So there is questions to be asked about size, scale and everything else. But both of them are treated very differently because the people in the camp, as I've said, they expect you to knock on the door regardless of where you live. But in Port Stanley, they do not want to see people standing on doors or knocking on doors, and they don't want to see people standing outside the polling station on election day, which again, as an MHK here on the Isle of Man, I found that absolutely bizarre that the candidates did not turn up until late in the evening until the vote was about to be announced.
Gosh, yes, that quite different to our system. So, of course, it's the summertime in the Falkland Islands, isn't it? So, longer days. How long were the days in?
The days were longer, but the weather, it's very windy in the summer. So it's quite strange. So it went from very cold to high temperatures very quickly, but there was very strong winds. So all of these factors we had to take into account, because when you're on the road for 10 days, you could get sunburned very quickly, but you wouldn't realise because there's an absolute howling gale going past the car. But you still had to stop because all of this is announced by the newspapers. So people knew exactly where we would be. Now, on the actual polling day, I actually was asked to go out with the polling, the mobile unit, to go to hospitals and older persons' complexes across the island. And I thought we were going to be out for about 2 hours. In the end, I was out for more than seven. And it was fascinating to go into the hospitals and to allow people to cast their votes. And I tell this story, but it's absolutely true. We spent 2.5 hours in the hospital in the Falkland Islands. We were driving a few miles away to go to the first older person's complex. And we got a phone call from the hospital. Some lady had been in an operation. And the first thing she asked when she came around was, can I still vote? And the doctor himself rang us and see if we can go back to take the lady's vote.
Gosh.
And what happened is we turned the vehicle around, we went back to the hospital, and the team who were taking the polling station and the mobile polling station went back into the hospital. The lady was still coming around from her operation and they actually allowed her to take her vote. And it was fascinating for me to observe that process. They really give the Falkland Islanders every opportunity to cast their vote. And the turnout in the camp was over 90%.
Wow.
And I think Port Stanley itself was near 90% themselves, just below 90%. So they really do take their vote very seriously in the Channel, in the Falkland Islands. But it's also, it's something that we could learn. The government makes sure everybody's given a fair opportunity to cast their vote, wherever they are in the Falkland Islands.
And of course, that's again. We started with the awkward question: who was paying for it? And yeah, I think you've identified that it wasn't a taxpayer expense. The other question is: what relevance does this have to the Isle of Man? And I think you're hinting there in the answer to that last question of value, because you actually get to find out how other people's elections work, and then you can ask questions about how our election works.
Absolutely. I thought from my own personal point of view, it was fascinating to see another election, how it unfolded, how people interacted. I spoke to so many islanders, but I also spoke to businesses. So the Chamber of Commerce, the Youth Parliament, spoke to their media about how they were looking at their election, what they were expecting from the election, what the outcome was, looking at the themes. So a lot of the themes was around immigration, around housing, around the size of government, the costs, very similar to issues that may appear in our general election in September this year. But I would actually say the only negative I had about the whole trip was the travel. It took me 33 hours to get there, leaving the island, and 44 hours non-stop coming back.
Gosh.
And that wasn't through a commercial airline or airport. It was through a military base, the RAF and Brides Norton in Oxford. And going out, 2 o'clock in the morning, they announced that our flight was cancelled. And I had to find an emergency accommodation in Oxford at 2 o'clock in the morning. It was quite difficult, but the team managed it and we got a hotel, unlike some other people who didn't. Coming back, I left my hotel on Friday at 9 p.m. on Friday, and I didn't get back to sleep until 5 o'clock Sunday afternoon when I arrived home. There was just significant delays. But did that spoil the trip? No, it didn't. But it just puts it into context of the things we have to do to go on these trips. This is not a 5-star luxury travel. The hotel, was great. Travel was difficult. But the experience was something I'll never forget, especially, I was also given the privilege and the honour to be able to pay my respects. I know that people from the Isle of Man served in the Falklands War in 1982. So for me personally, as an elected member, to go and pay my respects to the 255 British soldiers that lost their lives, and to be fair, the 649 Argentine members that lost, the soldiers that lost their lives, plus the three the Falkland Islanders that died in that conflict. It was an absolute honour and a privilege to pay those respects at those memorials.
Obviously, the Falkland Islands is different to the Isle of Man. You've described it's a much smaller electorate and therefore a much smaller government. How do they get 90% turnout? We're struggling to get half of that in our elections.
I think a lot of it goes back to 1982 and the conflict with Argentina. I think it comes down to the fact they really do respect their democracy. They have the same challenges as us financially. They have the same issues, as I've mentioned, immigration, housing, size of government and everything else they do. But there is a massive sense of community. There really is. And I think if you go back to one of the stories that I heard when I was there, Phil, was about the Goose Green Social Club, in which 119 Falkland Islanders were held hostage there for 7 weeks in appalling conditions by the Argentine. When I went to visit this hall and I spoke to local residents, the passion's still there. Mm. Their passion to vote and their passion for identity is immense. And it was such a privilege to speak to all of these islanders, and they still care about their island. They care about the future direction it's going. So to them, the importance around the vote was clear. And I think sometimes when we talk about our own identity and our own direction and our own future, maybe we should look at something like the Falkland Islands, just to say that, you know, I don't think on the Isle of Man that everything is bad as everyone paints. But we are very proud to live on a very small island that has a sense of community. And it's something that we should never forget.
And is it that kind of national pride, perhaps, that we're not good at, developing across the island to make people realise that pride in the place that you live and the love of the place that you live should also kind of... be reflected in the fact that you are bothered enough to turn out to vote to make sure that the people that you elect are going to look after the place that you love so much?
I think the one thing that I really found very similar to the Isle of Man in the Falkland Islands is the sense of community. The fact that we are proud of our island, we are proud of our heritage. What we need to do now in the coming months and coming years, even if, you know, whatever happens in the future, is that we have to start to embrace the community. We have to explain the difficult decisions we're making. We have to bring the public with us. And one of the first things the public can do is to get out and vote. And remember, you know, in September this year, there is an election, and people to get out and to voice their concerns, and making sure that the next government is actually listening and trying to explain those difficult decisions, but also trying to bring the people with them. So if you take the Falkland Islands election, they have 8 elected members, I've mentioned. Only 2 of them were re-elected. And when I spoke to candidates before the election, most of them said they were really struggling to engage with the community around really difficult decisions it had to make around housing, around the cost of living crisis, and getting off and on the island, which is what I encountered myself. You know, you shouldn't have to sit in a departure lounge with very little facilities for nearly 12 hours, which is what I had to do leaving the Falkland Islands. And if we go back leaving the UK to the Falkland Islands, having to again sit in an army base with very few facilities for, I think it was around 6 or 7 hours, and then being told at 2 o'clock in the morning your flight had been cancelled, with no support around you. It was up to you to find your own facilities. They were observations which I think is holding back the Falkland Islands. So we have got a lot to be positive here, but I think we can also learn a few lessons from how they engage and how they do grasp the election process.
Do they refer, or some of the parliamentarians down there refer to their colleagues as clowns?
No, I have to admit, I think what I found was a very collective group. So if we take, again, the camp, I know from speaking to people, the candidates that were standing all arranged themselves collectively to go in one car and knock on a door each. So what happens is they would knock on your door and the 5 candidates would go in, and you'd have your own discussion with the 5 candidates talking about topics, and then you can decide which of the 5 or candidates you voted for.
Gosh, so like a requisition meeting, but in your own home.
And I guess your reference is to the comments of my colleague from Ramsey, Mr. Hooper. We've, just like the Falkland Islands, we have gone through a very difficult period in respect of all of the challenges we faced as an island. And I think it's really has been difficult to get through the cost of living crisis, to get through the energy crisis, to recover from COVID. And we know there's so much more work needs to be done in the future. But to have a colleague stand up and call his colleagues clowns is totally inappropriate. And I think it probably does go against the Timwolf standing sort of orders, you know, which we abide by. Do I want to make a formal complaint about him? No. And I just hope he reflects more on his language, because this job is tough enough. And when you've got somebody making statements like that, all it does is put pressure on everybody else when we're trying to explain to our constituents how difficult this process is, because they are telling us that things are difficult. They're telling us that the cost of living is really hurting them. They're telling us that finding property on the Isle of Man, rental and first-time buyers, is difficult. You know, that accessing services, hospitals and everything else is difficult. It doesn't help when you've got a colleague absolutely just trying to put the boot in to score a point, which is pointless to me.
And yet, what Laurie Hooper says, that the particular reference to some Tynwald members being clowns, I think he'd said that hopefully we'll get rid of some of the clowns from Tynwald at the next election. It is the kind, what would you call it? Popular parlance, isn't it? You know, it's the sort of thing that the person on the bus, the person in the pub would say as a kind of off the cuff remark about politics. Should parliamentarians, though, you know, should they reflect the sort of language that's being used by the public, or should they be a little bit more circumspect? I guess your answer would be the latter.
Mr. Hooper is not a person in the pub. He is a member of the House of Keys, elected by his constituency in Ramsey. We apply the Nolan principles about leadership, accountability, openness, transparency. It is up to him to set the leadership on that. And I think he's failed on that particular post at a time when the island, similar to what happened in the Falkland Islands, where constituents are upset, they're angry. The government, this particular administration, has not been able to engage with the people of this island. They've not been able to get their sort of objectives and their vision delivered in this administration. The next government has to deliver on the promises that this administration and previous administrations have made, because that is what's happening at the moment. Do I think the Isle of Man is back to where I was in the 1980s when I left school and there was 3,000 unemployed? No, we're nowhere near that. So when people say to me that this island's on its knees, no, it isn't. But the warning signs are there that we need to start to listen, and we need to start to delivering some of those promises that makes our island better for everybody.
If we had a 90% turnout at elections, you know, a lot of the people who don't turn out to vote, and there's a whole range of different reasons, but one of the often stated reasons is, well, you're wasting your time turning out to vote because you just get the same shower back in, and it's not really going to make that much difference. First of all, do you think that's a fair reflection? And how would you encourage those people, the nigh on 50% of the public who choose not to vote, how would you encourage them? What would you say to them to say, actually, you really should be doing this?
There's obviously a percentage of people who've moved to the islands and not eligible to vote. We know that. There's obviously eligible a number of people who just can't vote for whatever reason. The government needs to do more to make sure that everyone's given a fair opportunity to vote. We need to engage with the youth of the island to make sure their voice is heard. But more importantly, you know, we need to explain that this job, you've been in it yourself, Phil, this job is a lot harder than people realise. And I've seen a lot of comments online that people will come in September if they're elected, bang on the table and expect the world to change. That's not how our political system works. It is about making sure you've got a shared value, a shared vision for this island, and you get behind it. And I think some of that, you know, goes right back to October 2021 when, you know, the current chief minister picked his council of ministers. The next council of ministers needs to have a shared vision, a shared value and delivery plan, and absolute hammer that home in the next 5 years. But the public also have got to be able to understand the difficulties. I think every household understands, you know, going into a supermarket and finding groceries 30% dearer than they were 3 or 4 years ago. People, you know, trying to obtain rental property and finding they're £500 or £600 more expensive than they were 18 months ago. These are the challenges what we've got to do is try and find some solutions to deliver more options for people of this island. But at the same time, I hope people, if they are going to vote, make sure they do vote in September, but also making sure that they challenge the candidates that are not over-promising, because it is about balance. You do need to, you know, as elected members, we need to hold government to account. We need to make sure we're making the right decisions. But it's up to the Council of Ministers that has that block vote to push through with real deliverables in the next 5 years.
And perhaps one of the legitimate criticisms that you could level at this Tynwald is there are far too many Tynwald members sitting in their individual corners hammering the table, and not enough Tynwald members sitting together listening and working collegiately.
And I think that is absolutely right. I've been in two administrations. This administration, there's smaller cliques in this administration, which has made it very difficult. I still personally believe that, you know, there's far too many members not sitting in government departments trying to help, you know, change policies, change directions, change decisions. And that, to me, the public don't quite understand. They don't realise, you know, people really believe everything's run through civil servants. No, civil servants, as you know yourself from your time, they make recommendations. It's up to us as politicians to either to go with that or to say that isn't right. And sometimes the only way you can do that is by being in departments. You know, for example, I'm the chair of planning. So I get a say on how this island's going to look and feel over the next few years by decisions we're making today. I sit with six lay members, but collectively we make that decision. Same happens in Manx Utilities. Same happens in departments. You know, it's up to us as elected members to roll up our sleeves, get into departments and to work on behalf of our constituents. And unfortunately, the pay structure of Tynwald members this time has made it in a way that it's far easier to sit on the back benches, ask a few questions and give the impression you're working your socks off, but you're actually not. And that is the culture that's got to change, because we need our elected, publicly elected members to be working in departments. What we don't want is publicly elected members sitting back and then those positions being taken up by members of Legislative Council. That is not correct. They should not have multiple roles. They should sit in one department, one sort of board, and support the publicly elected members.
That was Onchan MHK Rob Collister. So what do you think? With general elections here struggling to get a 50% turnout, there's lessons to learn from the Falkland Islands. And was Mr. Collister right to call out Laurie Hooper for calling Tynwald members clowns? Don't forget, this programme is available as a podcast. For now, I'm Phil Gorn. Go to my son Geisha Crom. Thanks for listening.